Greetings, podcast listeners. Welcome back. This is your host, Indra, with Aikido Talks. Welcome back to the end of January and on the cusp of February as we move forward. Hope this podcast finds you well, happy, and creative. We shall start with a new book, and it is Bushido by Inazo Nitobe. It is from Tuttle Books, T-U-T-T-L-E, a classic portrait of samurai martial culture. And we shall dive into a portion of the chapter called Veracity and Sincerity. And as we know, in terms of training, you know, this is part of it in Aikido specifically, as well as other martial arts too. I remember having a brief conversation with people and talking about martial arts for their young people, for their kids who are taking Aikido, and why it's important not to talk about it, you know, to people who are not training. If that's the case, then invite them to come and train so that they can see it. But to never play fight, as it were, you know, at the time that you are an Aikidoist, you really, your life is changed, basically, in short form, that you sort of put away childish things. You do different types of play. You no longer are doing fake throws. The late Sugano Sensei had always talked about an honest attack, and that one is where you're intentional in trying, or not trying, you do, just like in Star Wars. You don't try, you do. You do intentionally try to mark, to make contact with your target. And this is the way you learn and how you train and help each other. And once the parents got to understand that part of it, you know, it's a deeper way of understanding of why we have to do repetitions all the time. And so with this veracity and sincerity, and a sincere attack is really important, because you're facing the blade, you're facing this punch, and then you sort of don't hold on to this vestige of feelings anymore, but you start to get into the deep science of movement and intention and intuition and gut feelings. So without further ado, we will start with a portion of the chapter Veracity and Sincerity in chapter 7. Without veracity and sincerity, politeness is a farce and a show. Propriety carried beyond right bounds, says Masamune, becomes a lie. Let's repeat that sentence again. Propriety carried beyond right bounds, says Masamune, becomes a lie. An ancient poet has outdone Polonius in the advice he gives. Quote, to thyself be faithful, if in thy heart thou strayest not from truth. Without prayer thine the gods will keep thee whole. End quote. The apotheosis of sincerity to which Confucius gives expression in the Doctrine of the Mean attributes to it transcendental powers, almost identifying them with the divine. Sincerity is the end and the beginning of all things. Without sincerity, there would be nothing. He then dwells with eloquence on its far-reaching and long-enduring nature, its power to produce changes without movement, and by its mere presence to accomplish its purpose without effort. From the Chinese ideogram for sincerity, which is a combination of word and perfect, one is tempted to draw a parallel between it and the Neoplatonic doctrine of logos. To such height does the sage soar in his unwanted mystic flight. Lying on equivocation was deemed equally cowardly. The Bushi held that his high social position demanded a loftier standard of veracity than that of the tradesman and peasant. Bushi no Ichigon, the word of a samurai, or an exact German equivalent, Ritterwort, and I know I'm saying it wrong, please correct me, Ritterwort, Ritterwort, was sufficient guarantee for the truthfulness of an assertion. His word carried such weight with it that promises were generally made and fulfilled without a written pledge, which would have been deemed quite beneath his dignity. Many thrilling anecdotes were told of those who atoned by death for Nigon, a double tongue. The regard for veracity was so high that, unlike the generality of Christians who persistently violate the plain commands of the teacher not to swear, the best of samurai looked upon an oath as derogatory to their honor. I am well aware that they did swear by different deities or upon their swords, but never has swearing degenerated into wanton form and irreverent interjection. To emphasize our words, a practice was sometimes resorted to of literally sealing with blood. For the explanation of such a practice, I need only refer my readers to Goethe's Faust. A recent American writer is responsible for this statement, that if you ask an ordinary Japanese which is better, to tell a falsehood or be impolite, he will not hesitate to answer, to tell a falsehood. Dr. Peary is partly right and partly wrong, right in that an ordinary Japanese, even a samurai, may answer in the way ascribed to him, but wrong in attributing too much weight to the term he translates, falsehood. This word in Japanese, uso, is employed to denote anything which is not a truth, makoto, or fact, honto. Lowell tells us that Wordsworth would not distinguish between truth and fact, and an ordinary Japanese is in this respect as good as Wordsworth. As a Japanese, or even an American of any refinement, to tell you whether he dislikes you or whether he is sick to his stomach, and he will not hesitate long to tell falsehoods and answer, I like you much, or I am quite well, thank you. To sacrifice truth merely for the sake of politeness was regarded as an empty form, kyōre, and deception by sweet words. I am speaking now of the Bushido idea of veracity, but it may not be amiss to devote a few words to our commercial integrity, of which I have heard much complaint in foreign books and journals. A loose business morality has indeed been the worst blot on our national reputation. But before abusing it or hastily condemning the whole race for it, let us calmly study it, and we shall be rewarded with consolation for the future. The merchant was placed lowest in the category of vocations, the knight, the tiller of the soil, the mechanic, the merchant. The samurai derived his income from land and could even indulge, if he had a mind to, in amateur farming, but the counter and abacus were abhorred. We know the wisdom of this social arrangement. Montesquieu has made it clear that the debarring of the nobility from mercantile pursuits was an admirable social policy in that it prevented wealth from accumulating in the hands of the powerful. The separation of power and riches kept the distribution of the latter more nearly equitable. And with this, we will be right back. And we are back. So this is just a short excerpt from the chapter on veracity and sincerity. But I found it, and I hope you did as well, find how profound that's very specific portion of a person's character can mean so much by their words. And for those of us who take Japanese lessons, Japanese language lessons, or take cultural classes in them, or doing tea ceremony or what have you outside of, in addition of, or other than Aikido or anything, the deeper you go, you learn more about the culture and what it means. I remember with Yamada Sensei a lot on the mat, people would notice, you know, he's observing people on the mat, the students, and he'll be in one part of the mat and then the other, he's watching. And depending on what he says, he didn't waste his words. If he said something, he meant it. But he did not go about overusing his words and cheapening them. He'd rather just keep his mouth shut. And sometimes if he were upset with something and said nothing, that would cut you like a knife. With no words or just a look, or maybe not even a look. And that's even worse. He didn't have to put a hand on you for you to feel it, if you had any common sense whatsoever, or if you even connected to this universe, okay? And some of that practice is so meaningful, but by the finest details. And this is something that practicing Aikido you learn. And for those of us who are listening who don't practice Aikido, as you know, I try to cater to everyone. Because Aikido, I believe, belongs to everyone, and I believe everyone should take Aikido. But it is helpful to start it when you are supple, where you can do the rolls and you can do these things. But lessons can be learned by everyone. And if you're not able to, then at least spread the word and get people to join in. It's a lovely community. It really is. It's a global community of human beings improving themselves. But it really just reminded me, reading this excerpt, how important words are. And that I found it quite interesting, that little piece about, you know, having some kind of a document to show that you mean what you say was beneath the bushi. You know, take my word for it. Because that's the highest of honor I'm giving you, and I mean it. You know, why should I have a piece of paper to back me up? That doesn't make sense. Make it make sense. So with that, my dear friends, we shall continue this chapter. I think it's not as long. This book is quite small, but chock full. It is about 137 pages. That's including the index at the back of a few pages. But it's easy enough to put in your book, your bag, and take it with you if you're commuting somewhere or sitting in an office on an appointment. Just whip out and just kind of browse through it. But it's essential. These are some basic tenets that we all can use, whether we train in Aikido or martial arts in general or not. Once again, my dear friends, thank you for tuning in to Aikido Talks. Welcome back, and I look forward to joining with you the very next time.